What we find is that when you move the system from the status quo system, which is not meritocratic, to the fully meritocratic system, the number of visits provided by your health workers goes up by 22%, which is huge.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks. My name is Tim Phillips. What inspires us to work hard? Is it the promise of a promotion, or is it just about making some more money? A recent experiment in Sierra Leone offers some insights and probably some warnings as well for employers. Erica De Serrano of the Kellogg School at Northwestern was one of the researchers, and she joins me now. Erica, welcome to Vox Dev Talks.
Hello.
First of all, let's have a look at the economics behind this, because I mentioned in the introduction that it's about more money and more status if you want to inspire people to work hard. So I guess as economists, are these the two important incentives to make our employees work harder?
Yeah, I think that's right. So we think of employees as being motivated both by money and by status, prestige. And that's why promotions, we believe, are a way of motivating employees, because they are embedding both. So promotions come typically with more money, but also with more prestige.
But of course, the mechanism by which this all works has to be that there has to be some kind of meritocracy at work here, that if you do work hard and well, then you do achieve that promotion. Again, as economists, we sort of assume that that's the way that businesses work, firms work in a capitalist economy. We know it's not perfect, but we assume that's the rule. Is this too optimistic? Is meritocracy, generally speaking, the way things work?
Well, many organizations are meritocratic, but that's definitely not the case for every organization. So, for example, if you take the public sector, especially in developing countries, there is vast evidence that promotions are not meritocratic there. In fact, there is evidence that they're often based on connections. They're often based also on tenure. Now, whether tenure is fully meritocratic enough is, and you know, it's not obvious. But even if you think of the private sector in richer countries, there is, for example, evidence that across every layer of an hierarchy of hierarchies, women and minorities tend to be promoted less than men, even holding fixed performance. So definitely meritocracy is not everywhere.
And so if promotion isn't perceived as meritocratic by the people who are working in an organization, does this break that incentive that we see no impact on effort if we hold up to the possibility of promotion?
Yeah, and this is in part what I've studied. And the question here is whether, you know, there is an effect. But if there is an effect on effort, it could actually be a negative effect. And this is especially the case if you think of promotions where, when promoted, you get a big increase in salary. So imagine you're in a situation in an organization where, I mean, you work for that organization and there is a promotion possibility, but then you see your colleague who is actually, you believe, is not very performing, and you see that person being promoted. Well, this means the promotion is probably not meritocratic. Well, you can be pissed off by this situation. And so if you're in a situation with non-meritocratic promotions, effort could potentially go down rather than not change.
Well, you tested out what the textbooks say, what we learn on our courses, by focusing on community health workers in Sierra Leone for this experiment. We're going to be talking about that. But first of all, explain to us what these community health workers are doing. What's their jobs like?
Yes, nowadays, community health workers are everywhere in many developing countries. So the idea is the following. In many rural communities of developing countries, people have limited access to hospitals and to clinics because they're far away. It's expensive to reach them. Roads are not good. And so what governments are doing is that they're hiring these community health workers in local areas. And these community health workers have the role of providing basic service to their community. So they provide, like, they educate the community about basic health issues, how to prevent diseases. And then they provide services like pre and postnatal check. So these are not nurses. These are really people who receive a training. They typically are not health workers to start with. They receive a training by the government, and then they start providing these basic health services, which have been shown, by the way, to have huge effects on mortality.
Yes, we have covered this a couple of times in Vox Dev Talks about the incredible possibilities that there are for community health workers to change outcomes, especially for mothers and their children. If that works well now, in this circumstance, the community health workers... Which category do they consider their job is in? Is it a job where if they perform well, did they think that they would get promoted on merit, or did they assume promotion worked in some other way?
So we actually asked them in our study, and half of them told us that they thought that to be promoted, you need to have connections, the right people.
Yeah.
So many people think, you know, the promotion is not meritocratic, and this actually reflects the truth, the reality, how it is before the start of our experiment, which is that basically those who decide on promotion are typically, is the local health authority, who typically don't know these health workers well, and so promotions tend to be non-meritocratic, and clearly we see that among health workers that we have in our study.
And what does promotion mean to them? How does the job change? How does their circumstances change?
So promotions come with a very big salary increase. It nearly doubles the salary.
Gosh.
Also, the type of job changes. So just to explain you how it works, basically, Sierra Leone is divided in geographical areas. And in each area, there are 10 to 12 health workers. And these health workers are supervised by a peer supervisors, they're called. Each time a peer supervisor leaves her job, she's replaced by one of the health workers she used to supervise.
Okay.
So the promotion here is from a health worker position to a supervisor position. And supervisors monitor and train health workers. So, you know, it's quite a responsibility. So it makes sense that they earn more money. But they don't work more hours. We have evidence of that. So this is a job that comes with more money per hour and more prestige. And we have evidence that nearly every health worker in our sample is willing to take their job.
So you created an experiment to examine the impact on effort and how that process might work and could work better. How do you manage to do that? How do you manage to divide up health workers into treatment and control groups and randomize that as well?
A lot of discussion with the government and specifically here with the Ministry of Health in Sierra Leone was very keen in trying to understand whether their promotion system was the right one or not. And so we worked with them. We're working 372 geographical areas, which is nearly, you know, it's a big portion of the country. And what we did is that we randomized these geographical areas in different treatments. So in a random half of them, we changed the promotion system and we made it more meritocratic. So as I said, it used to be before that the decision on who to promote when there is a vacancy was decided by the local health authority. And this is still the case in half of the geographical areas, a random half. But in another random half, we made the promotion purely meritocratic. So basically, we track the number of health services provided by each health workers, and whoever provides the highest number is promoted to become a supervisor. So the system becomes meritocratic. We also randomize, and this is cross-randomized, whether we inform the health workers about the pay of their supervisors. The context we're in is a context where many health workers are not aware about what the supervisors earn, because this is typically hidden information. We actually revealed this information to a random half of the health workers. And so this triggers a change in how they perceived the pay to progress. And so by revealing information for many of the health workers, we actually increase the extent to which they think pay is steep, pay progression is steep. And so we also create random variation in perceived pay progression.
And this measure of productivity, the number of visits that they make, I suppose one of the beauties of that is it's very easy for everyone to see who is performing well. You just have to count the number of visits.
Exactly. So at least in the study, our main measure of productivity is indeed the number of visits. But because we didn't want to rely on self-reported data, Because mm-hmm. obviously, if you ask health workers how many visits you do, you know, they may overreport that number.
Everywhere in the world, yes.
Exactly. Especially if there is a promotion, you know, attached mm-hmm. to that performance. So what we did, at least for the study, is that we went to the village and we surveyed households, potential clients, and we asked them, look, how many visits did you receive from the health workers? How many health services did you receive? You know, if the household has a young kid, we asked them, did you receive a prenatal check, postnatal check? Did you receive information about health and so forth? We're talking about the number of visits, but there is another aspect which is very important, which is the quality of the visits.
Yes, of
because
course.
One thing you may worry about is that if number of visits goes up, maybe quality goes down.
Mm-hmm.
So we also made sure to collect data on the length of the visits, the number of health topics discussed during those visits, stuff like this, which really reflect the quality.
So we now have this very intensive experiment. This must have been a lot of work to set it up. But you are getting extremely good data from it, I would imagine. What was the effect of merit-based promotion, that system of merit-based promotion, on the number of visits did you find?
So I'll tell you the effect in percentage mm-hmm. because it's the easiest to interpret. So basically sure. what we find is that when you move the system from the status quo system, which is not meritocratic, to the fully meritocratic system, the number of visits provided by a health worker goes up by 22%, which is huge.
Yeah.
As I said, you may be worried that health workers provide more visits because they're, you know, in a way they're incentivized for that in order to be promoted, but they reduce the quality of the visits, but we actually don't see a reduction in quality of the visits. So we see this increase in the number of visits, large increase in the number of visits without a reduction in quality.
As you say, this is huge because the situation at that moment has not yet changed. They're not being paid more. They don't have more status yet. It's just the prospect of a fair promotion has created that change in their behavior.
Exactly. Now, just to be clear in terms of the result, we see that this effect is stronger for two types of workers.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, and this is what you would expect, it's stronger for workers who believe or who know that pay progresses steeply.
Yes.
If a worker doesn't think pay increases, a more meritocratic system does not necessarily trigger more effort. And this is what we see. Not that much. It does trigger more effort, but not as enough as if the worker thinks pay is really steep. And also the effect is much stronger for those workers who are good, who think they can actually be promoted.
Yep.
Those who are really low ability and who know they'll never make it, basically a meritocratic promotion doesn't really incentivize them.
What about that category within your experiment who sort of had the worst of both worlds, that they are still in a situation where promotion is not going to be meritocratic, but they have been told how much that promotion might be worth? What was the effect on their behavior?
So we find that actually effort of these workers goes down.
Oh.
And this, I think, is the most surprising results, but also in a way, from a policy perspective, maybe the most important one. Because in many developing countries, actually, you're in a situation where promotions are not meritocratic or not fully meritocratic, and yet you say pay being very steep. So basically pay increasing a lot as you go up the ladder of the organization. And we show that this is bad for performance of the lower tier workers. We then go and try to understand how come workers reduce effort when pay progresses steeply, but promotions are not meritocratic. And here there are two stories.
Mm-hmm.
One could be that workers start to spend a lot of time lobbying or, you know, becoming friends of the local health authority.
Oh, I see. So doing the thing that would get them promoted, but isn't necessarily productive.
Exactly. Get that connection, but forget about the visits, which is not good for, you know, for health outcomes. The other story is more like a moral effect. Like, I'm not happy. I'm seeing that people around me who are not necessarily good are promoted. Well, you know what? I'm demotivated and maybe I leave the job. And we actually show that the evidence is more in line with the latter, the moral effect, the negative moral effect, because we don't see effects on lobbying or time spent trying to talk with the local health authority.
Was this a surprise to you to have the strength of results that you got?
It does surprise to me because what people think about and the standard theory in economics is one, you know, that tells you that when promotions become meritocratic, if pay progression is steep enough, you should see workers become more productive. And to be clear, this is what we do find. We find that when promotions are meritocratic, pay progression make people more productive. But people have not really studied what happens when promotions are non-meritocratic, which, you know, happens vastly and very often in the world. And so this result is quite, you know, I think we're the first to study this. And I think, you know, that's a result that obviously I'm biased, but I think it really matters.
Yes, as I said in the beginning, there is some interesting and encouraging results there. There are also some warnings about the things that we really should not be doing.
Exactly.
So, Erica, let's talk about the implications of this. Now, first of all, we've talked a lot about these two incentives, pay progression and meritocracy. Can we say anything straightforward about the relative importance of these two incentives?
So I guess the relative importance is hard to say from the study, at least, because what we see in the study is that the two interact, and they interact substantially. So understanding the effect of one really depends on the other. That said, if I had to rank the two, what I can say, at least from the study, is that what we see is that going for meritocracy is good. In the sense, fixed pay progression, going to a more meritocratic system will be good in terms of increasing performance of the lower tier workers and probably performance at the top as well. Increasing pay progression, however, is actually more ambiguous. The effects are more ambiguous because, as I said, that's great to increase pay progression if you're in a meritocratic system. So increasing the pay of your boss, if you're in a meritocratic system, may be good. And that's what we see. But increasing it in a non-meritocratic system really backfires. And so in a way, pay progression, the effect of pay progression depends on the underlying meritocracy.
Yes, and that meritocracy has to be perceived as well, doesn't it? It has to exist and people have to know that it exists.
Absolutely. And this is something we do not study. So in a way, we study perceptions, but you know, we don't look at what creates those perceptions. I mean, there is reality and then there is perceptions. And I think it would be very interesting to study this more.
Now, having come back to the government, who, as you say, supported you from the outset and were very interested in this, you came back to them with some quite definite results, results that might have been slightly uncomfortable for some of the people within the government. What was their reaction? Are they going to implement your recommendations?
Yes, the Ministry of Health in Sierra Leone has been very responsive to our results. And we started the collaboration with the idea of trying to implement some of the results, if interesting. And what's very interesting with Sierra Leone, but also with many other settings, is that nowadays people have phones. And phones are really useful because it allows governments to track health worker performance much more easily than it used to be. So it's much easier nowadays to have a meritocratic system based on performance because we can measure performance, which was very hard and more expensive to do in the past. Now, it's hard to have good measure of performance when you can talk about this, but the point is that we are in a world where performance measures are more and more common, and the government is willing to use those to promote. So nowadays, the way they're starting to promote is a way in which they still give some weight to the local health authority. So it's not purely meritocratic, but they're starting to take into account promotion. So we are getting there, and they're changing the way they promote. And we are doing now follow-up work, and I can tell you more about this, on different ways of promoting, different levels of meritocracy. So they're really keen in trying to study more all these promotion systems.
What other types of meritocracy might there be?
So one natural way of promoting is promoting, for example, by tenure. This is like sort of the easier way of promoting. It's like person who has been there for the longest time gets promoted, but it's unclear if this is meritocratic or not. It depends on whether the learning curve over the job is very steep. So one thing we would be interested in, and we are discussing with them, is to really compare to a system which is used vastly in bureaucracy, which is a simply tenure-based system. So this is, for example, another way. But does it work better? Does it work not? It's unclear. The beauty of tenure-based system is that they're very transparent. Everyone knows about it. There is no, you know, perception and reality are sort of more aligned. And so there is an open question of whether those simpler systems work well or not.
With this research, you came back with some definite recommendations for the Ministry of Health in Sierra Leone about how one particular role is incentivized and managed. Is there something about this that is specific to this context, or do you think you're uncovering deeper principles here that could be employed in other roles, other countries, in the private and the public sector as well?
So as in any study, there are some specific aspects to our context.
Sure.
That's for sure. But I think generally we do learn something that goes beyond that. Let me just say that if you look, for example, at this amazing data, which is the World Bank Bureaucracy Indicators, which actually tells you country by country the level of meritocracy in promotions, but also in other stuff like in hiring and firing and this kind of things. And that also tells you pay progression. So basically pay at different layers of the hierarchy. You do see that in many countries, pay progression is bundled with lack of meritocracy. And what we show is that this is the worst scenario you can be in. So in a way, our results tell a story here saying, well, you should be careful in avoiding bundling these two personnel policy tools together. I mean, lack of meritocracy and pay progression. Then there is another thing, which is that, as I said, promotions, even in richer countries in the private sector, tend to favor, we have seen in the past, men over women, for example. Now, if that's the case, making progression very steep, as it has become in the years, may very well demotivate these workers who are not favored. So here in the specific example I gave you, it could demotivate women. So lower tier women could be demotivated by the fact that they see that they don't have the same possibility of being promoted than a man. And so then they may quit. And then this has a whole number of general implications, which are important to think about.
As you say, progression has become very steep in many economies. It's something that's constantly under discussion in the US where you are, UK where I am, across Europe, not just in low-income countries. When I speak to chief executives and I raise this, they seem to think that pay progression, where when you get promoted, you get paid a lot more, that seems to be a rather good idea for them. I can understand why they might take that view for their own personal beliefs. But does this research tell us anything about that? For a given level of meritocracy, is it better to have steeper pay progression?
So it depends on the level of meritocracy. So yes. If you're in a very purely meritocratic system, the answer is yes. We see that if you pay the boss more, holding the pay of the lower tier fixed. So definitely increasing the pay at the top while lowering the pay at the bottom would be different. But just increasing the pay at the top, holding the pay at the bottom fixed, well, sure, we see that it actually increases effort substantially. However, if you're in a non-meritocratic system, pay progression is a problem, as I said. And you're totally right in saying that pay progression has increased massively. And in fact, in the data, we see that the gap between higher and lower paying job has increased by more than 20 times in the past year. So it's a huge increase, but that's also what we see in the public sector of developing countries. So yes, let's use pay progression, but let's make sure first that the system is very meritocratic.
Well, finally, Erica, there is one other way to possibly do this for these type of jobs where you want as much productivity as possible, because ultimately what you want is for as many citizens as possible to have access to this service. Could you not achieve the maximum productivity by just paying the healthcare workers for each visit that they do?
Yes, but there are two problems with that. The problem is, A, can you actually measure performance accurately? And this has been a problem in every context. It's hard to measure performance accurately. As I said, with phones and with self-reporting techniques, we are getting there, and it's easier and cheaper now to get measures of performance. But there is a lot of research out there that shows, and yet, you know, it's not perfect. So yes, it makes sense to use performance-based incentive if performance is accurately and well measured. Also, keep in mind that the number of visits is something you may be able to measure, but what about quality? And here the question is, in the very long run, if you incentivize quantity, are you going to damage quality? So there is a lot of open question related to this, but the introduction of phones and of remote monitoring system will help in terms of implementing better pay for performance incentive schemes.
It's an incredibly interesting strand of work, and I'm going to be looking forward to seeing what comes next in this. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Tim.
The paper is called Promotions and Productivity, the Role of Meritocracy and Pay Progression in the Public Sector. And the authors are Erica De Serrano, Philip Castrao, and Gianmarco Leon Ciliotto. This has been a Vox Dev Talk. Now, the best way to make sure that you don't miss a Vox Dev Talk is to subscribe. Go on, do it straight after this one. I'm sure you've been inspired to. You will find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you ever do miss an episode, go to voxdev.org. You will find the episode right there, and you will also find articles about the papers we feature.